now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Patty Barkley, Tony Cascarino, and broadcasting from his usual undisclosed mystery location in Ripondon, it's Ollie Kay. Today we'll be reviewing the best of the FA Cup action, including Manchester United versus Arsenal and Stoke against West Ham. It's also a relegation special. My panel will predict who the Premier League will be saying goodbye to come May. Okay, FA Cup, talking points. But before we get into that, I just want to get just a very quick whip round, because I don't know if this happened last year. I'm getting old. I forget. But how absolutely rubbish is it that this weekend there were only four games of football to watch involving top-flight teams? No disrespect. I know there was a full program in the championship and so on, and it's wonderful. And then, like, 2 weeks from now, it's an international break. And then it's pretty much balls to the wall for all of April until the end of the season. I mean, does anybody else find the Premier League scheduling this year somewhat baffling?
Yeah.
Patty?
Yes, I do. I was amazed to discover that suddenly, from nowhere, that there were no Premier League games on Saturday. I mean, when I was a kid, no. You see, we didn't have things like the Champions League group stages in my day, but we did have the FA Cup though. But yes, I mean, it does seem pretty silly when just about every other day of the year has a Premier League fixture, but a Saturday at 3 o'clock passes without any, when there's no winter break. I don't know.
And when we have another international break in 2 weeks.
Yes, exactly. I must admit, you made a suggestion of sort of compartmentalizing the season, concentrating an international season. And I personally would like to concentrate the cup. I'd like to have the third round on the Saturday, the fourth round on the Wednesday, the fifth round on the Saturday, and so on. I don't see why the cup can be done and dusted in three fantastically exciting in continuous weeks. So I think it all argues to, if we're going to have so many competitions and we're going to have such a lot of changing around, let's compartmentalize the season to make it more compartmentalized.
Ollie, any good reason why there was no Premier League football this weekend?
Well, traditionally there's no league football or top flight league football on third and fourth round weekend. I think no football on fifth round weekend. I think that is a new development, presumably for the benefit of TV, because they want all eyes to be on the televised games on a Saturday and Sunday. And I have to say, if you look at the amount of games that are left to be played over the coming weeks, it's absurd. I don't think it works for anybody in any competition. It's like at the moment, Nobody is benefiting from it.
Except if Arsenal had forced a draw at Old Trafford, what a great result that would have been, because Arsenal are out of the Champions League, and it would have tipped the balance in their favour in the Barclays Premier League.
This provides a neat segue for me for us to talk about the United Arsenal game. Now, when I saw this lineup that Fergie put out, for those keeping score at home, it's Wes Brown, who I was reliably informed, was going to become the janitor at Old Trafford until they kind of realized that they needed him again. That's why he doesn't play for 4 months and then they chuck him in there. Yeah. Wes Brown and Smalling at the back. Mm. But then this absurd midfield with Rafael and Fabio out wide, and John O'Shea, the holding midfielder, Darren Gibson to add, I guess, the quality and the creativity. That was a joke. But then it wins. But then they go ahead and win. I'm almost wondering: is this the kind of lineup that Fergie put out to show how weak his squad was? That he wouldn't have cared if they fell out, if they went out of the competition, and it kind of put him in a win-win situation, because if you win, you go through. If you go out, you might get some media stick for disrespecting the cup, but hey, that's nothing like the media stick you get for not actually talking to the media. And then he would have everybody fresh and ready to go for the Champions League and for the title running.
Well, I think. Before the game, everyone would have felt, seeing the lineups, that Arsenal had a glorious opportunity of knocking United out of the FA Cup at Old Trafford, which is never, it's always a difficult feat. But I do think that in the psyche of Sir Alex Ferguson is that he knows how to beat Arsenal. And it doesn't have to be with his best team. He sets his team up in a certain manner. They stop Arsenal doing the things they like to do, under lots of pressure, and they will fold. Arsenal had a huge amount of possession, looked the better team, and created just as many chances, and yet you would...
10 minutes, they were going through Wes Brown as if he wasn't there. You thought, this is going to be embarrassing. This is a 0-4.
That's what it looked, but as the game wore on, like we always get... And this is the feeling on the terraces now at the Emirates, where the fans are totally not buying into this way of Arsenal approaching games.
We'll get to Arsenal and the Arsenal approach, but Ollie, you were there on the ground. Is my theory just totally insane and wrong and out of left field that Fergie put this lineup up because he really wasn't bothered either way?
I mean, if you look at 2 weeks previous, Scholes played 3 games in 8 days, and as it happened, seemed to have run out of steam by half-time in the second game, having played very well for the first half. And I think that has probably told Ferguson, or reminded Ferguson of the difficulties in getting Scholes through a certain amount of games in a short time. And I think that is probably why we had the team we saw on Saturday, and you have to say it worked extremely well, because although they were outpassed and outplayed for long periods, they were far more efficient, as Wenger said, through gritted teeth.
Cass, 3 trophies up in smoke in 13 days for Arsenal. It's the age-old debate. Is it down to Wenger's dogmatic nature in believing the way he plays? Is it down to the lack of an English centre half, or are they just too soft and femme?
There's a stubbornness that comes with Arsene Wenger that, even at all costs, he will not change or adapt to situations and the way that teams are playing against his side. He seemingly thinks it's all about what Arsenal do. And in football, it's not. Sometimes you have to stop what the opposition do or try to, give them... It can be a chess match. You have to outwit managers. He's not doing that. I look at the Arsenal back line. I played against Adams, Keown, all them, Winterburn, Dixon. They intimidated you. They didn't make it easy for you. Like Vidic doesn't make it easy for you when you play against him. He'll push you. And look at the reaction of Smalling playing alongside Vidic. He's now reacting like Vidic. I look at the Arsenal back four and I think, do you know what? What an easy back four to play against. You'd be absolutely loving it. Even if you weren't the most gifted player, you'd just love it because they never intimidate. I don't mean by kicking you off the park. I mean by pressurising you, making it difficult. And that is Arsenal's biggest failing, is that the bullying word that people think Man United, it's not as strong as bullying.
I will follow up on that because I'm Mr. Contrarian. Christopher Hitchens is my god. Who intimidates you in that sense, in the physical intimidation sense, in Barcelona? Is it that big, scary Daniel Alves?
Comes
Iniesta.
Gab, you can intimidate via pressure. When Barcelona played Arsenal, they intimidated by being in their face and being on top of them every pass, every
move.
It's
like swatting away a fly.
You don't have to kick people to intimidate. You just pressurise them. You make it difficult for them. Arsenal don't make it difficult for the opposition at all.
Ollie, is it really that easy to play against Arsenal because they don't make it difficult for you? And
well, if you look at Arsenal's record in the league in recent weeks, they've conceded very few goals. I mean, people, including Wenger, have convinced themselves that Giroud and Koscielny was some fantastic partnership that's come together and was the answer to all their prayers, and Szczesny behind them. But I have to say, I know Koscielny and Giroud got an awful lot of praise for their performance over the 2 games against Barcelona. And let's be honest, they were playing against some of the best players in the world, but the number of times that Barcelona got through that defence like a knife through butter. I would have thought was a worry to should be a worry to Arsenal and a worry for the next few weeks, because if you look at Manchester United's first choice central defenders or even their backup central defenders, because obviously Vermaelen has been out all season for Arsenal, if you look at Chelsea's, that wouldn't have happened with United and Chelsea. I think Barcelona would beat United or Chelsea over two legs, but I don't think they would beat them in the same manner, and a manner that, for all the talk of injustice, I think it was it was far more comprehensive than an aggregate of 4-3 suggested.
Between 96 and 2005, you know, Arsene Wenger won 4 FA Cups. Mm-hmm. He won 3 league titles. You know, he put out a team, both the double winners in 98 and the Invincibles, that was very successful and got very good results.
Yes.
What I want to start to you did is Wenger, in his as he gets older, has he become less pragmatic, or has he always been this way? But the game around him has changed.
Without doubt, he's become less pragmatic. I mean, I do think he's become an excessively purist, and instead of actually defining Wengerism, he's trying to replicate Barcelona.
I think, well, it's obvious to anybody listening that I'm with Paddy on this one, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I worry when teams who are built to create chances fail to create chances, not when they fail to score, because you know football's a low-scoring game.
Yes.
There are some things which are out of your control. Mm. And I just wonder, though, a point that's rarely made is, over the last 5 years, we can debate whether the Premier League has gotten better or tougher versus before, but I think it's undoubted that if you look at the managers that he has come up against in the last 5 years, you're talking about, you know, Mourinho, you're talking about Rafa Benitez, you're talking about Sir Alex Ferguson, of course, who was there before as well.
Yes.
You're about Ancelotti. These are all guys who've won multiple European trophies. In the period before that, in the sort of the first Wenger era, with all due respect, take Fergie out of it, and it was Gerard Houllier, it was John Gregory.
Yeah.
It was
Big Sam.
It was Claudio Ranieri. It was Big Sam.
Steve McLaren.
I mean, it was a slightly different. You know, he's basically up against some of these people I mentioned before will be mentioned as the greatest managers in the history of the game. I think most people would feel that Ferguson, Mourinho are already there, and you know, Ancelotti and Benitez couldn't be too far behind that. Is that also part of the reason why he hasn't won as much?
Gab, there's a real point in sport, in any sport you look at. If you're successful, people will study you, watch you, see how your teams do, watch your training, and they clone from you. And there's been people who have learned what the way Wenger did his managing style 10, 15 years ago that are coming up now and are working like Wenger did. People used to go and watch Ajax. Mm. And my coach, Laszlo Bolini, I know you know from your days, he used to go over to Holland and watch them.
Yep.
Watch them train. He'd speak to the guys that work there. Why were you successful? They want to know everything about this success. That's what Tony Mulberry did with Middlesbrough, didn't he? Now, I know Tony's gone down there, but what I'm trying to say is people follow what you've did, and then they understand how you got successful. Yeah. Now, Fergie is always evolved and become a bigger, stronger manager. Now, I wouldn't argue that Wenger has evolved like Fergie has as a manager.
Paddy, do you buy this? So the Wenger becomes static and Fergie evolves into a human being, and Wenger's still homo erectus?
Wenger himself, it was very interesting. He was asked about Ferguson and used the word innovative, which I think was put his finger on it. Ferguson is a radical, and Wenger, in a way, is conservative now.
We have to move on now, which is good news for Paul Scholes, because we won't hear the impassioned defense of Scholesy not being able to tackle, which I'm sure is what Paddy was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
move on to Stoke and West Ham. Now, I think it's a tremendous achievement for Stoke to get to the Wembley semi-final, where it's going to be an all sort of northern. Can we call Stoke a northern team? Well, yeah, relative to where we are, they're northern.
The most southerly team left in the FA Cup, I think.
Which makes them the softest team as well, right?
Exactly, they're southern softies.
A couple things about this, because we talked about how Tony Pulis he's added a bit of a slightly different dimension with Pennant and Etherington. Although, of course, the oldies but goodies still work. That first goal,
yep.
The lap throw-in,
yep.
Huth.
Yep.
And it's a usual argument, difficult to defend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got no problem with the long throw. I find it quite exciting. It's like a lot of unjustifiable things, like penalty shootouts. They're actually better than football. And I think the long throw also comes into that category. However, I find it... I mean, I've probably banged on about this before, that towel business. Allowing them to use those towels, in my opinion, is absolutely ridiculous. Are we going to be allowed to take on a pile of sand to mount the ball before taking a penalty? I mean, it is just not football, and it should be stopped forthwith. Having said that... Yeah, no problem with the style. The wingers. Etherington to me is one of the 20 best sites of the Premier League.
Ollie, sorry, that was me miming Etherington accused by some of tumbling and helping the referee make a decision.
Well,
sometimes.
I think referees need all the help they can get.
Speaking of referees with help, I really wanted to have a referee-free podcast this week.
We have done,
but until now, because Ollie, I just want to get your take on this. Mike Jones, in this game, I think three controversial decisions. I'm not going to call them controversial, just probably three wrong decisions. And what was kind of creepy about this, you know, Piquion handles the ball for West Ham's goal. I think it's obvious. Some suggestion that Jones was simply unsighted, couldn't see it. That's fine. But then in the second half, there's two big decisions that go against West Ham, and it's Walters basically dumping Tompkins on his head, and the Scotty Parker on Matthew Etherington tackle, which just so incensed Parker, and then Etherington, of course, missed the penalty. I really what makes me really uneasy about this is you get the sense that he blew a decision in the first half, and then somebody told him at halftime, "Hey, you got it wrong," and that he made up for it in the second half. Should I be banished to hell just for even suggesting that?
Not for suggesting that. Maybe for other things. My reaction watching it was that, well, it almost evened out from the first half. But I mean, that really should not be in a referee's mind. I would like to think it isn't. And I always like to give referees the benefit of the doubt. I don't think there's any of the bias that various managers suggest. I don't think there's any of the unfairness that various managers suggest, but they're human, and maybe at times they subconsciously think, well, or, you know, maybe they think, well, I'm not sure about that one, but I know I robbed them in the first half, so maybe I have to go that way. I mean, it shouldn't be the way they think. It really shouldn't, but it's... It would be human nature, I guess. But these guys aren't meant to be human, are they?
No, they're certainly not. Cass, you've played football at a higher level than the rest of us. Is this something that you experience? Is this something that happens? Especially, is this something that maybe happens more today, that a referee knows he's blown a call, knows he's made a mistake, and then makes up for it in the second half? And is this a good thing, because ultimately things even themselves out, as some people say?
Well, it's always happened. Intimidation. I mean, managers have done it.
I'm talking about intimidation. I'm talking about get something wrong. You know for a fact you got it wrong, maybe because somebody tells you at halftime who's seen it on television, and you say, ooh, I have to fix this in the second half.
Yeah, you certainly get the feeling that some referees will take that. They will. If you're going down the tunnel at half-time and people are verbaling you and shouting, you know, and it's basically pressurising you about a decision they feel you got wrong.
But you know, you did get wrong.
Yeah, you did get wrong. And you find out you've made it wrong. Cool.
And then you fix it in the second half. Is that okay?
I don't say, of course, not all of them, but there are definitely cases where I've seen referees absolutely being convinced that they got a decision wrong and they want to make up for it. I really believe that.
And
played in games where referees have totally given us a decision where they know they've got something wrong earlier.
And from a utilitarian standpoint, is this okay because things even themselves out? Well, or is it something that we should just be mature enough and say, look, referee, you made a mistake in good faith. Please call the next one as you see it and don't give a makeup call.
Well, of course it's not all right, but as life, as we find out more often than not, these things do happen and will continue to happen because people have seeds in their head that they can't get out and they think they need to make a wrong into a right. They will do it. Some great referees have been absolutely affected by decisions they made earlier in the game that they've then adjusted to the opposition.
Well, we will wrap up our little FA Cup segment by... by some predictions. And I'm going to start with Stoke and Bolton. Cass.
Bolton, 2-1.
Ollie.
Stoke.
Paddy.
Bolton.
City United. Cass.
City.
Ollie.
United.
Paddy.
City.
We're going to take a closer look now at relegation. It's quite remarkable, but there's 4 points separating 11th from 18th place in the Premier League. And in fact, Liverpool, who are sixth, they're as close to the relegation zone as they are to mighty Manchester City in third place. So I think, looking forward, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty, a lot of twists and turns. I don't think it's, personally, it's at all stuck on that Wigan, Wolves, and West Ham, the three W's, are going down, or West Brom, as some people have opined. But I want to have a quick whip round, and I think the format for this is basically going to be, we're going to go one by one, and you're going to give me a reason why the team will stay up, i.e. what is a team's strength, and a reason why the team could go down. If you don't think the team's going to go down, please just give me a reason why the team could go down, because unless you're some kind of seer, you can't.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Can't say for 100% who's going to go down. So we're going to start with you, Paddy, and a team you admired. Fulham, 35 points. Play 29. Looks reasonably safe to me, but hey, give me a reason why Fulham will stay up.
Quality of player. I think they've got a good spine of top class, experienced players, starting with Schwarzer in goal, carrying on through Breda, Hangeland, plus the experience of Danny Murphy and the trump card, Bobby Zamora back. Class all through the spine of the team.
Manager praise him without even mentioning old Sparky. Cass, a reason why Fulham could go down?
Only injuries. If they had a big batch of injuries, can't see anything else keeping Fulham. They'll be safe for me.
Ollie, Stoke City, 34 points from 29 games. Give me a reason they're going to stay up.
Their home record, which is fantastic. I'm just looking, they've won as many home records as many home games as Spurs, and they've won more home games than most teams in the division. They don't win many away, but they don't have to with that crowd and with obviously their strength on set plays.
Paddy, Stoke City, give me a reason why they're could go down.
Well, only in my dreams. The FA suddenly banned towels. Rory Delap can't get the ball into the box anymore, and whoop, down they go.
I suspect some hate mail's on its way. It's you and your mate, Gerard Houllier. Aston Villa, 33 points, 29 games. Your old club, give me a reason why they're staying up.
I think they've certainly got Ashley Young, Agbonlahor, lots of pace in the team. I think there's an element of the, you know, All Brighton coming in, doing really well off the flank. I like him. Stuart Downing, I think he's a really, really talented guy, Stuart Downing. Fabulous left foot. I think they're strong enough. I don't think they're great at the back, but the back line for me, with Friedel behind them, even though Dunn and Collins seem to be getting themselves in a few issues off the park, I think Villa have got way too much quality.
Ollie, it's up to you to give me a reason why Villa are going down. Well, and you can't just say Gerard Houllier.
No, I certainly wouldn't say that. I would say that they've only got 2 points more than West Ham at the moment. It's so incredibly tight down there. And they do have... I mean, they are still in a bit of a rut, mentally, psychologically. There have been so many sort of stories about issues coming out of there. I mean, they look to have enough quality. They look to have far much quality to even be in the bottom half. But you never know. They could get sucked in if they don't unite as a group.
Unity as a group. Patty, your fellow Scot, Steve Keane. Yep. I shouldn't say fellow Scot because half these guys are Scottish anyway. So, but anyway, your buddy Steve Keane at Rovers. Tell me why they're going to stay up, and the Vankys-Kintaro partnership will lead Rovers to glory.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, I say this without a great deal of conviction, but there's good character. There's good team ethic there. And Ryan Nelson is a player for whom I've got great respect as a character. Samba, likewise. Robinson in goal, maybe not the best goalkeeper in the country, but a lot of experience there. So I think they might just, but it'll be very close.
Cass, you know the drill. This one should, judging from your smile, you probably reckon this is going to be easy. Tell me my Rovers are going down.
Yeah, and these are my team that I really think could go down. I mean, Paddy just touched on the two boys, centre-half Nelson and Samba, big strong boys, and tell you what, they half concede a lot of goals away from home. Their defensive record is awful. I don't think that they're a side that create too many chances. Goal scorer, I mean, Jason Roberts is in and out of the team. I don't really think anybody there are going to think, oh, we could get him half a dozen goals.
You don't like Kalinich? What's your bias against tall centre forwards?
No, I just don't think. I think if any team could really suffer, I think it's Blackburn, because I just think there's not a lot of goals there, and I think away from home they're going to get beaten up a lot of times. And totally, I mean, I've seen them concede some unbelievably bad goals. You know, with just pace. Pace alone has really hurt the Blackburn back four. Players have got away and got goals against them.
Ollie, West Bromwich Albion. Please, 32 points, 29 games. Tell me why they're staying up.
Well, I just thought there was something in their last performance, the win at Birmingham, which showed a side of West Brom that I hadn't seen before. Certainly not since they stayed up back in 2005. They just showed a bit more metal, a bit more belief, really, a bit more strength on the ball, strength when they didn't have the ball. And I think they're one of those teams that you have to have a big question mark against. But they do seem, under Roy Hodgson, to have developed something quickly in terms of a bit of a fighting spirit, which they didn't have before.
I did, of course, I did this on purpose to make you uncomfortable, but continuing our rotation. Patty, tell me why West Bromwich Albion could go down under your buddy Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, persistent defensive frailty. I mean, let's face it, it was the case under each of the previous managers. They would give away really silly goals. And when you're getting to that really squeaky bum time, what you don't want to be giving away is silly goals. And I just think there are too many silly goals left in West Brom, despite the obvious improvement caused by the organisational abilities of Roy Hodgson.
Cass, you get your tangerine dream. Blackpool, Ollie, why are they staying up?
Because they will win the odd match, and even though they're in high scoring games all the time, getting Charlie Adam back because he's been under suspension, I just think they'll win football games because they've got such an adventurous style. There'll be lots of heavy defeats and lots of conceding, but I do think they're far more likely to get 3 points than 1 point in a game, and that for me could keep them up.
Ollie put the boot into Ollie.
Well, I don't like to, because I think they and he and Blackpool have just been the absolute breathtaking.
Nobody
season.
Wants I would them to
love
go down.
I would love them more than any of the others to stay up.
Okay, but Dow, tell me but why they could go down.
They're still only 1 point clear of the relegation zone after this incredible season they've had. They should be, you know, they will be looking at it thinking, you know, what do we need? What more can we give to get ourselves safe? And I just fear for them that their inexperience at this level, that their slightly cavalier style might be something that lets them down towards the end of the season. I mean, they've got more games to play. They've got a lot of home games to play, actually. But I just fear for them.
Birmingham City, tough cup runs, 31 points, 28 games. Although that game, they do have the game in hand, although that is Chelsea away. Paddy, stick up for your fellow Scot.
Yes, I think Birmingham City have got, I mean, as we go through all these candidates, is there's not a bad side in the division. There is not a bad team. There is not a bad manager in the Barclays Premier League. So somebody is going to be perceived to have failed. And in my opinion, no club has failed this season. Birmingham City are an obvious case. They're in serious relegation danger. And they've already, this season, won more trophies than all the other clubs put together. So, I mean, it's a sign of the quality. And I think that Birmingham, what they have is good experience. They have players playing the best football of their lives, in my opinion, in Boya, in Carr, and that's testament to good team spirit. Johnson, of course, has had so many plaudits, but he's still playing well. And, of course, possibly slightly undersung hero Barry Ferguson. So, I mean, there's just far too much, not necessarily quality, but character and experience for them to go down.
Cass, the awful home truth about why Birmingham City could go down.
Well, they've basically gone for pretty much the same 11 more often than not, more than any other team, especially last year as well. Only reason I think of Birmingham could go is maybe the squad and having to play the same players on such a regular basis that maybe they might run out of legs. May do. But I would serious doubts. I think that, you know, I think it will take a lot for Birmingham to go down.
Ollie, in 1966, West Ham won the World Cup, so surely they're not going to go down this year. They have 31 points from 29 games. Tell me why they could stay up.
Because they finally look to have got their some of their summer signings fit, like Obina and Hitzlsperger, who have made a really good impact. Scott Parker has been fantastic, one of the players of the season. Colton Cole has finally got his form in the right order, and I thought even in defeat yesterday, they showed an awful lot more character than they had been earlier this season. If you think back to that game at Newcastle around the turn of the year, they were just abysmal after going a goal down, and I think that their response yesterday suggested that there is a lot more character and a lot more belief and purpose about West Ham than there was a couple of months ago.
Paddy?
This is the only way West Ham can go down. Scott Parker, for whom I may well vote as Football Writers Association Footballer of the Year this year, gets a boat, takes out Matthew Upson, Robert Green, Carlton Cole, and a few of the other players. And they get lost and shipwrecked.
Actually, you know, sorry, if I jump in there and I have to do this, but I know a lot of West Ham fans who would actually suggest that if he took Upson and Green and sent them out to sea, that they would actually be a much better side. But as long as Parker stayed, of course. But interesting, you're picking up those two guys.
And they get shipwrecked on an island, and it's unable to effect a rescue before the end of the season. I think if West Ham could then, in those circumstances, go down.
There you go. The West Ham defo staying up. Cass, Wolverhampton Wanderers, 29 points, 29 games. Why are they staying up?
Well, their team.
And you get a bonus point if you put Mr. Jarvis in your answer.
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, their team ethic is second to none. They work exceptionally hard. I think Doyle will get more goals than he has in the first part of the season. I think he's been brilliant for them, but needs to score more. I think Jarvis supplying the crosses and the width. I mean, he's got a lot of pace about him. I look at, you know, people like Fletcher coming off the bench, and then Sylvain Blakes. They look like they can get goals when they need to be more adventurous in their style. I think Wolves have got 29 points, but I could easily add 5 or 6 points on top of them, where I think that they will make up for in the second second part of the season.
Ollie, is it going to be? Tell me why it's going to be a sad summer for Barnsley Mick.
Well, if you look at their running, their away games in particular look tricky. Sunderland, Birmingham, Stoke, Newcastle, Villa, they're not necessarily the places where you'd expect to go and pick up 3 points. They are a team that draw a lot of games. And I think although they're a stronger team than they were last season when they stayed up, I think, as Paddy alluded to earlier, the competition at the bottom is so intense that there isn't a bad team in the division. There isn't a sort of Portsmouth, Burnley, Hull situation where you could see them going a mile off. And at least one, two, three good teams are actually going to get relegated. And Wolves are going to be among them if they don't get their act together soon.
Paddy, Wigan Athletic, and Dave Whelan. We've praised them sometimes for the way they play. Tell me why they're staying up.
They've had a bit of practice, and that does help. I also think that they've got a young player in McCarthy who's in form, who's, in my opinion, scored the goal of the season this year, the individual goal of the season. Piece of magic against some opponents who escaped me. But
do I need to send Wayne Rooney round to your house?
In my opinion, I got more of a thrill out of the McCarthy goal than even the Rooney one, which is saying something. I think they've just enough to scrape, perhaps on goal difference, out of trouble.
Cass, easy enough for you. Why are Wigan done and dusted?
Well, they would be my biggest certainties, not because they're bottom of the league. I just think there's sometimes, I mean, the Wigan pitch is not the greatest and they've struggled to play really good football. They are, the side do like to get down and play, especially from the back. And that has crucified them at times, overplaying in really dangerous areas. I don't see lots of goals in Wigan. I just see two players, Roddy Elgar and Enzogbia, who can get them goals. Maybe James McCarthy, who's a very good player, but I don't see many, many goals in there. I think Wigan are the biggest certainties.
All right, there you have it. Now we will have our final whip round where you will nominate your three teams. Just to provide you a little bit of context, you all have the little mini sort of bottom 10 Premier League table. Here's something to consider. In 2007... you were guaranteed safety with 39 points. In 2008, you were guaranteed safety with 37 points. In 2009, it was 35 points. And in 2010, i.e. last season, it was just 31 points. Now, obviously, I think we can assume that this season will be closer to 2007, given the way it's so tight at the bottom. So please bear that in mind when making your selection. I will go with Ollie last, since he'll be doing some umming, no doubt, when we turn to him. And I will begin with you, Paddy. Who's going down?
A Lancastrian treble of Blackburn Rovers, Blackpool, and Wigan Athletic.
Interesting. Cass.
Wigan, West Brom, and Blackburn.
Ooh, that's two votes for Blackburn. Don't think Venkies will be happy with you guys. Ollie?
Wigan, Blackpool, and West Brom.
Wow, this is really interesting because while everybody agrees that Wigan are going down, we have two votes apiece for West Brom and Blackburn. There you have it. It's March 14th, and these are the bold predictions. Feel free to email us and mock everybody for having the courage to come out and state their opinion 2 months before the end of the season. All right, time now for some quick hits. Paddy, four English clubs played in Europe last week. Three of them lost, and Spurs were held to a scoreless draw at home, playing a brutal but effective form of Catenaccio and the 9-0-1 formation. Please reassure me that the Premier League is still the best and brightest thing around.
I wish I could, Gab, but I think this is going to be a very, very interesting week. If both Manchester City and Liverpool get knocked out, our perception of the strength in depth vis-a-vis the Spanish League, which we agree has become almost a two-horse race, despite Sevilla's draw with Barcelona. I don't know. I wish you'd asked me at the end of the week instead of the beginning.
and United, too, could be slightly tricky. Ah, the FA Youth Cup. Youngsters playing for the sheer love of the game. Except it didn't quite work out that way when United played Liverpool on Sunday. United came from 2 goals down to win 3-2, but 4 players were sent off, including, bizarrely, Manchester United striker Paul Pogba, who got a second yellow for a supposedly exaggerated and run-up and taking a penalty, which the referee, a man named Coote, I might add, found to be taunting. Also, 6 fans were arrested, and there were chants about Hillsborough and Heysel. Ali, are you more surprised by all this or depressed by all this?
Well, I did actually watch it on TV, and I thought it was an absolutely compelling, brilliant game. I mean, it was there was really good quality on both teams. I think Ravel Morrison, the United tearaway, will probably attract the most headlines for his 2 goals. But the atmosphere on the pitch and off the pitch was a problem, and people who were there were telling me about the chance, and I just find that depressing that anyone would go along to a Youth Cup game and talk and chant about Hillsborough and Heysel. It's, I mean, yes, it happens with it happens at first team games all the time with various disasters, but a Youth Cup game, you would like to think that with so many kids in the crowd it would be different.
Just for my benefit, not for broadcast, was the Pogba thing as stupid as Tony Evans described it to me?
I didn't realise it was a bookable offence.
But he did book him for taking the run-up in a funny way.
Yeah. That was his second, as you say, that was his second yellow. There was a belief at the time that I think he'd got sneaky booking in the first half, and not many people realised it. And people thought he'd been booked for that, and then booked for his dissent in arguing that he shouldn't have to take it again, which would have been rather harder to tolerate. But if it's a bookable offence, it's a bookable offence.
Bolton Wanderers are through to the FA Cup semi-final, where they'll take on Stoke. Cass, we've been praising Owen Coyle all season long. In your opinion, what, if anything, makes him special?
Well, I think the way that Bolton played a few years ago, and sometimes criticised for their style of play, very entertaining, got goals. Elmander's come on leaps and bounds. Kevin Davis continually having the vision to bring in Sturridge. I think I look at them and I think they're a far more accomplished side and entertaining, and for me he's done a hell of a job.
Who will you be managing in 3 years time?
Will he be managing Bolton?
No, who will he be managing in 3 years time?
I have no idea, Gab. It'll be
Take
a bigger club than Bolton.
Up. Anyway, now one for you now. Is it true that you got up early to watch the A-League final between Central Coast Mariners and Brisbane Roar? And by the way, that's not the noise the sound the crowd make at Leighton Orient on Sunday morning. And if so, was it any good?
It was certainly very, very exciting. Packed stadium, 50,000 people, very noisy Australian fans. It was early morning, so everything seems a little bit surreal at that hour, especially after a late night out the night before. But it was extremely exciting. The game, it was 0-0. The game goes into extra time, and Central Coast score twice. They go 2-0 up, and you figure it's all over. There's no way Brisbane are getting back into this. And then 3 minutes from time, Brisbane pull one back, and then they pull another one back, and basically at the last second finishes 2-2, penalty kicks, and Brisbane were 1. It's disappointing for Central Coast, but Brisbane apparently went something like 28 games undefeated this season. Good advert for Aussie football. That's all we've got time for this week, but remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. Mine is normally on Mondays, but hey, guess what? I'm not doing one this week. Patty, yours is on?
On Tuesdays.
On Tuesdays, lucky boy. But don't worry, we'll be back next week. Till then, au revoir.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.